This is John Leeson. You would not believe it. It is the voice of K9 welcoming you to Gallifrey Public Radio. Please listen.
I'm Lacey from Just One More Fix, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whitaker and beyond. Your GPR hosts are Jay Witten.
Safety measures are for chumps who don't know what they're doing.
Keir Hansen.
Oh, hold on. I saw it on my mixer. I turned up the suck. Hold on.
And Haley Malley.
I feel like I might need to carb up for next week's episode.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do discuss recent news, episodes that have already aired in their home territories, and the occasional interesting rumor. But don't worry, if we look too far into the future, we'll give you a fair warning.
Welcome to episode 266 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where you may be a little exhausted from the family table and office water cooler conversations about religion and politics, but at least you know that among this social circle, we can all find a long list of reasons to get along amicably. Well, you know, as long as nobody brings up that new Star Wars movie. I'm Jay.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Keir. This week, we're going to close the calendars on the calendar year 2017 and take a little time to reflect on all the great things that the year has brought us as fans of the Doctor Who franchise. You'll note that we say franchise and not just program, because as anyone who has listened to us blather on GPR before, we are just as big fans of the audios, the novels, the comic book extensions to the universe as what we've been given on screen. But what's been on screen, though? There's no place else to start. We can kind of do this round robin, or we can just throw a topic out there and just all dive on it, because I think I got a feeling that there's a lot of crossover on our thank you lists to Doctor Who this year. Haley, where do you want to begin?
I think I'll begin with something I've talked a lot about this year, and that's Pearl Mackey.
Yes.
Who has been fantastic. I adore her. Not somebody I'd ever seen or heard of before this year, and I'm a big fan now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this was probably one of the greatest gifts we've received as new Whovians in quite some time. I was having a conversation with a couple of other folks on this over the course of the holiday week, a couple Christmas conversations, and then again around the new year, and they were all saying, oh, you know, it's interesting what they did with the script and this and the other thing. Oh, you know Moffat and his closing messages, and and Capaldi's arc, and but Bill, wow. And they started just going. I didn't even prompt them. They just started running with it. And I heard from two different individuals who were not in earshot of one another, two separate conversations, who said that I don't normally – I mean, everybody has the Doctor conversation. I think we were joking about this with David Barsky a couple of weeks ago. We were saying, who's your companion as kind of an unusual question. But they both prompted themselves to say, I don't normally think of having a companion that I latch onto. Bill is my companion. And one of them was a Whovian of long standing, and one was one who, kind of like the two of you, kind of came into it around 2006, 2007 or so, and then just rolled, and expanded, webbed out from there. But right. They both said that there were characteristics about what Pearl Mackey did with that persona that just you couldn't adore.
Oh yeah, I mean, just everything that she brought to the character was just so incredibly fantastic. I mean, we've talked about it before, how the companion is the voice of the viewer. They're there to ask the questions of the Doctor, to say, hey, what's this thing that you keep getting excited about or whatever. And Pearl Mackey with Bill just did a brilliant job of that.
Yeah.
Like the moments where you're going to say something to the screen, she's there half a second before you and says exactly what you were thinking.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely brilliant.
And does so in a way that doesn't become You will run into issues with other companions, or maybe at certain moments with other companions. I won't say that it defines them, but you'll have early moments with Rose, or mm-hmm. early moments with some of your classic companions, Polly or Tegan and Nyssa, where it's a constant line of questioning to the point where you can tell they're just teeing up the doctor to go on some exposition.
Mm-hmm.
But with Pearl, there was always an angle to her questions. It was because she was genuinely curious, or she was actually calling something into question because she didn't quite believe it, or wanted a justification for something. So it was kind of a fresh take as far as I was concerned. And I thought that was really one of the things that really quickly endeared me to her, was that she was eager and open-eyed mm-hmm. about everything, but still really vocal and invested.
And one of the things I loved about her too was that Moffat used her to draw attention to things that, you know, could be, you know, just accepted because, well, that's how it is, and really kind of shine the spotlight on it and been like, yeah, sure, we can accept it as that, but why? And really kind of drew the attention to it to make you wonder,
yeah,
is this something we really need to be putting up with or tolerating or continuing or whatever the case is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes along with our conversation. This is going to be a whole other episode in and of itself, where we're going to talk about the kind of the societal messages in Doctor Who of late, and the reasons why we kind of believe that they should be there and they're well justified. And Bill's character has been a kind of personification of that evolution. Mm-hmm. Because exactly what you said, because of the fact that the stuff that she questions, the stuff that she challenges specifically, or the things that she brings to the forefront and vocalizes, where the viewing audience says, yeah, why is it that we've just kind of put up with that for the past, you know, who knows how many years, decades, just kind of expresses it's time to move things forward, because your audience has moved forward. Society has mm-hmm. moved forward. So therefore, the program, as a reflection or a lens through which we are seeing this cross-section of society, should equally move forward. So yeah, I think that's been a great manifestation of that movement. So I wanted to throw out a question to you both mm-hmm. as to whether or not, and I've been asking this of a lot of people probably within about the past 10 days, as to whether or not, well, I should say, you know, 7 days, you know, since the Christmas episode aired, whether or not you feel that this was A, Peter Capaldi's best season, B, whether or not it has been Stephen Moffat's best season at the helm, like really overseeing the gel of the entire season.
I think it might be Capaldi's best season, just because I really loved the relationship that they built between him and Bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's Moffat's best season. Now I've got to think for a minute for that. So Jay can answer part of one of those questions.
You know, I have to say that Capaldi's best season is difficult for me, because I mean, I've said it before. I appreciated him coming, the personification that we got in the Zygon inversion.
Okay.
Like that speech we got from him was just iconic, you know, and that's such a Doctor Who thing that I can't begin to think of anything ever topping that for me personally.
That's fair.
The season as a whole, though, I mean, it's difficult to pick it apart, because the arc that we got with the 12th Doctor was so fantastic that just shining a spotlight on one section of it and saying this was the standout, it's difficult, because this wouldn't have been nearly as fantastic had we not had the, you know, the very gruff, you know, she's my care, she cares, so I don't have to, doctor that we first got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the juxtaposition of those two extremes is really what made this one stand out for me.
Right.
But just as a performance thing, I do think that Capaldi really, like, he knew he was leaving. He knew that this was his last chance to portray the Doctor, and he went out guns blazing. I mean, he gave it 100% and just would not let up on the gas.
Yeah, I'm still torn to a certain degree on the same question, specifically for Capaldi. We'll discuss Moffat in a minute, but the fact that this was the culmination, this was the closure to the arc that you just referenced. The fact that we've gone from the caretaker Doctor to the Doctor of Kindness. and really, really laying in hard on that idea of the only thing that you can hope to do at the end of the day to anyone, friend or foe, near or far, is just be kind. And it's the only thing that you can attempt in whatever effort that leads you to, whatever actions you take. If your goal at the end of the day is just to be kind to anyone else around you, it's not a huge request. It's not a, it may be challenging from one individual to the next, from one instance to the next. But if that's your agenda, the world is a better place. The universe is a better place for your effort. Mm-hmm. And him coming to that realization within this closing season and them really working that hard into the storylines throughout. I mean, you can really see hints of it in every single episode that fell across this series. Moments where he's trying to, where either he's still kind of grappling with that dichotomy or he's committed to it and said it's time to really latch onto it. My personal give on that was the fact that he's going through these psychotherapy sessions with Missy, specifically going through that kind of helping her determine that there is still, that there is the capacity for good within her, despite everything. Mm-hmm. I think subtextually forces him to come to the same conclusions. He's analyzing himself as well in those same conversations, comes to those same conclusions and is able to really accept that and say, you know what? I know I've been working with you. Don't know if I'm going to be able to save you. Going to take one last stab at it. But I know for myself with certainty that this is my purpose. This is my mission statement. And so from that aspect, I would say that this is one of the finest seasons they've worked with him and his representation of the character. And the only reason why I might trip over that is because last season with Hellbent Heaven Sent and episodes like that, Zygon Inversion, Zygon Invasion, I mean, you were getting these incredible individual performances. So maybe the question is a little stilted. Is this the best season for Capaldi or is this the best season for Capaldi's doctor? Maybe those are two separate questions. But yeah, I think I see what both of you have kind of led with that. Now, but Moffat, you only got one option. Dude behind the control stick.
This was a really good season, but I was thinking back and season six with Matt Smith and all of the River Song stuff that was happening in that season. That was a very intricately constructed story that unfolded throughout the season and then unfolded backwards once you knew how it went. That was some pretty impressive show running.
Yeah. Clever writing, which is one of the things we enjoy.
That's his forte. That's where he shines when he gets to be clever.
Yeah. Okay. Jay, where would you sit on the Moffat's finest?
You know, it's, I would definitely say it's in it's in the top five. We'll give him that.
Wow. Not last place.
The past two seasons, again, have been so brilliant. We've leading into the whole Capaldi era with the, coming off of series 7 with 7A and then 7B,
that was not Moffat's finest.
No, it was not. Coming off of that, and then then we have the 50th anniversary special, and then we get the 12th Doctor, and just having that continuous storyline, even with the one-off episodes and Monster of the Week kind of thing, you could tell that he had a plan. That, we may not have gotten all of the threads and things like that, but I feel like this season was a culmination of things that he had been building to for 3 years. And it really did, it kind of showcased the fact that, yes, he knows what he's doing. You may not like it. You may not agree with it personally, but he had a grand plan. He was able to realize that, almost completely to fruition. We still never got the call to save Gallifrey with the 12th Doctor, but it's small nitpicks like that. If that's all you're grasping at the end of it, then yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that this was probably his best season.
All right. And we'll have to open that up to the listeners as well to be able to chime in on that particular topic, because this is, we're going to have another episode where we're talking specifically about the Moffat legacy in memoriam. We've done ones where at intervals we'd step back and say, all right, what is this curly-haired man doing? while he was still writing. And we'd say, well, you know, we're going to see where he's going to go with it and so forth. But now we get to look back on it in retrospect and say, you know, where did he take things forward? And we'll devote the time to that. But if you've got opinions on specifically whether or not this was one of his finest seasons, from a showrunner, from a chief editor and overseeing story writer, let us know. Obviously, one of the other things as far as cinematically or
wait, did you answer that question, Kier?
I personally would say that I think The Impossible Astronaut season was one of his better crafted seasons. But I think because of what they've been able to accomplish this season from the individual writers, him included, but just as far as what the writers have put forward, the stories this season, with very few exception, have been rock solid. And this would be one of the best written Moffat seasons, if not the best written Moffat season, because it doesn't have Sherwood Forest in it. But I mean, other than that, yeah. But obviously, the major topic on everyone's agenda right now is the Jodie Whittaker 13th Doctor gift that we've been given and everything that propels forward. I have had this conversation with somebody every day for the past month straight. Not a single day has gone by that someone has not asked, well, why did they do it? Or, you know, what are they thinking? Or what's your take on it? And mm-hmm. and my answer is all the same thing we've been discussing here. Well, it's been high time for a while. So yeah. Now we get to move the story as it could have been 15 years ago, if not more. So, but all right. So as a gift to the Whovians, we've discussed this in from a number of different perspectives, but just as far as something being provided to the fandom for the year, what are your impressions about Jodie Whittaker specifically as our 13th Doctor?
It's mostly anticipation at this point. I mean, we've got, a minute of actual screen time with her as the Doctor?
Yeah.
It was an awesome minute. I really enjoyed it, but I'm mostly just really looking forward to seeing what else we get from her still, because we just haven't seen it. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, knowing Jodie Whittaker, looking at some of the stuff that she's done previously, I'm thrilled about this. I am super excited about it. You know, as Haley mentioned, it's kind of difficult to say, oh yeah, no, we, you know, I loved how she did that one thing, because she hasn't done anything except
she falls out of door like nobody's business.
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, sign her up for the Die Hard reboot so that she can play, you know, Gruber. but it's not Christmas till I see Hans Gruber fall out of Nakatomi Plaza. I think that she is going to be able to bring something that the show and the character desperately need. I think coming off of the 12th Doctor's arc of, you know, always be kind, you know, no matter what, it'll be interesting to see where she takes the character, where she chooses to emphasize some of the things that may not have been a priority for other actors. Mm. You know, a lot of it's going to be the kind of stories that she's given and things like that, but I think that she is going to be a fantastic Doctor.
Yeah. And again, you know, we've talked about this a lot. Episodes to come, we'll do predictive episodes for the 13th Doctor. I mean, as far as agenda, as far as persona, as far as objectives and so forth, you know, and we'll look back at that historically as far as, you know, regenerations have always been an opportunity to go back and make a steering adjustment within the Doctor doing of specifically the next manifestation. They find a way to be able to spin it so that this is something where the Doctor has, whether or not they were cognizant of it, were taking on their next identity in order to move something forward. Something that their predecessor acknowledged, even in the closing moments, might have acknowledged that needed addressing. Mm-hmm. So if Capaldi has been really, or the 12th Doctor had kind of closed his book realizing there is a need for compassion and kindness to all living things, regardless of their history, regardless of their typecast, regardless of any sort of a predisposition, then maybe that means that we're going to get the real whimsical Doctor. We're going to get like a sort of a 10th Doctor-esque zany adventure without the time war guilt. You know, and now who knows where that's going to go? I mean, and these are the things we'll possibly discuss. But as far as just specifically going with Jodie, and specifically going with in that minute, you know, that we've received, and the milliseconds after regeneration, the moment that her eyes focus and she realizes where she is, the grin breaks because the game's afoot. You know, and there's cool crap to be done here, and she's just going to dive into this, you know, with both hands, is exactly what I wanted right now. You know, we started, we had some Moffat years where things were very heavy. We had to really, you know, propel some messages. We had to mm-hmm. say some things that were uncomfortable to say, and we had to deal with things like, am I a good man? And things of that sort. And so we've gone through the heavy Doctor years. And now we're at a point where, for the love of God, with everything that's going on in real world, give me some television right now that is pure freaking fun. And yeah. Just enjoy the hell out of it. You know, I want cotton candy and fireworks displays. I want a carnival. For the next couple of months. Well, when I get it, a couple of months after I start getting it again, whenever the autumn.
Like a year.
Yeah. Well, the autumn. It returns in the fall, whatever the fall means. Get it? She's falling out of the TARDIS. Returns in the fall.
Uh-huh.
I didn't write it. But as far as televised, who? Anything else you want to particularly make note of that you think was a hell of a gift that we received in 2017? I think the return of Rona Monroe was a great shades of things to come, and I want to see what Chibnall's going to be doing with his writer and director selection going forward. Rachel Talalay killing it again.
Yeah. You know, I was pleasantly surprised by Nardole.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was...
Yeah, good ad.
That was nice.
I don't know. Well, the final cuddle... moment.
He's a hugging doctor now.
He is. That's an interesting flip, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, the one thing that I had, you know, it didn't pertain exactly to the show per se, but the announcement of Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor. I mean, you remember when Capaldi got announced? It was they set aside half an hour of TV and they interviewed him and things like that.
Yeah.
And with Jodie Whittaker, it was real subdued. It was, you know, what, like a 30-second spot, 45 yep. seconds. And it, you know, no dialogue at all. Just kind of like, oh, there she is. All right, back to the tennis match. And
mm-hmm. What, tennis? But what?
I feel like that helped it tremendously. Because instead of drawing it out and, you know, asking how she found out or things like that, you know, making it a big production about Jodie Whittaker... It spawned a lot of discussion about this doctor, and it gave everybody the chance to instantly react and instantly talk about it. And I think that it was a good thing. I mean, some of the opinions and stuff may not have been, you know, I mean, there were a lot of divisive opinions, but that's part of being a Whovian. So yeah, I thought that it was a great announcement.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an insane day.
Yeah.
That's like one of those, you know, where were you when kind of days. No, seriously. I mean, I don't think I'll forget for quite some time exactly where I was at the moment when the announcement came out, and the fact that, you know, I was really glad that my phone had as much of a charge on it as it did because of all the people that I wanted to get in touch with.
Yes. And well, I mean, that you know, where were you when the female doctor got announced thing?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, fun thing was hearing like on mainstream news as they were talking about it, because, you know, Doctor Who is not something that's always going to show up.
No, they're not exactly eloquent about it. The British Doctor What program?
This goofy old sci-fi show.
It was an interesting day.
You know, was still on.
Had my aunts who I didn't even know, like, you know, could operate a TV, calling me and asking me if I'd heard about it. And then, I mean, the real strange thing, I actually watched sports for a good 10 minutes.
Yeah.
No, the best part was, like, weeks later being asked by people, did you hear about this?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard about that.
How many people did you lie to? To say,
oh, really?
What?
No, that's interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
I got to the point where I was like, oh, no, tell me more.
Use it as a litmus test. How much do you really understand this news blurb that you just heard on your way into work? All right. Yeah. Well, aside from our televised Doctor Who gifts for the year, what else has 2017 brought us that we're particularly pleased about? I know I've been kind of lax on the books department. I normally will absorb at least a few other novelizations and extensions in the literary scope. I've grabbed a few comics. We'll talk about that kind of separately.
It's been a hell of a
but
year.
But other stuff. You know, what's that?
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be a GPR cast if we didn't. Yeah. I said it's been a hell of a year. It's understandable. But it wouldn't be a GPR cast if we didn't, you know, go on about Big Finish.
Yeah. Okay. So, I just threw one down, but we've been talking about this all year. I'm in the middle right now of both Time War with McGann, which is crazy. It's not what I expected at all. So hats off to Matt Fitton and all the other writers who have been giving us some phenomenal stories within that one. And the Time Master, because seriously, Sir Derek Jacobi. I'm done. And waiting for the Gallifrey series to step into the Time War as well. So that whole chapter that Big Finish has been given the rights to right now has just been bonkers.
Yeah. I haven't made it to the Time Master yet. But the unit stuff that we've been getting is just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Two installments this year, so series 4 and series 5. And series 4 was a one that has been really near and dear to me personally, because as we discussed a lot at LI Who with the Head Over Feels folks, that was the one that actually brought Osgood in close interaction with Joe Grant. So you've got unit support then and now working together, Katie Manning working with Ingrid Oliver, and it was just it was a great set of stories to begin with. And they're still moving forward with it, and it's still interesting stuff. It's kind of like – it's kind of what I was hoping from – I'm going to sort of cross streams here – that I was hoping that S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to be for the MCU. That's what UNIT does for me within the Doctor Who range. Because it's like the messes that we have to deal with when you're not around.
Right.
So S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't become that. It was sort of this tee up for, oh, we got another movie coming up. Oh, we've got to work a storyline that's going to get ready for this other big cinematic release. UNIT doesn't do any of that. It's just entirely encapsulated, and it's still fascinating in its own little bubble. So,
yeah, it's really enjoyable.
And then I would be lax without saying that we were given the second season for the 10th Doctor Adventures with Billy Piper.
Yes.
So that's more ear candy for you. And Rose as a character is on a whole new level now, because I really think and people can go ahead and they can challenge me if they want to. I'm saying this from a positive perspective. But it's gonna come out weird because I can't think of a better way to say it. I think Billy Piper has become a stronger actor since she's left Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So I mean, you see some of the work that she did. I always fall back on Penny Dreadful because I think she was amazing on that series. But now what she's putting in to her character in the audiobooks, coming back to Rose and being given the opportunity to add more to it. And I think you do get genuinely something different when you're working in voice acting than you do when you're on camera, because you can play around with delivery and things. It just shows that she's on a higher level now, and it just makes it that much more enjoyable. So,
yeah, I need to add that one to my phone. I need to start listening to that one. I forgot. I forgot it was out because, I mean, we've talked about it. Big Finish puts out like 8 weeks worth of content in a single week. There's no way to keep up.
Yeah. Well, and there's very little way to pay for it all, too. Here's another 50. Here's another 50.
I just worked out a deal with Big Finish. My direct deposit goes straight into their account. So,
And from the comic realm, I will mention, we mentioned this a few times earlier in this year, but when we had our four Doctor crossover with the Lost Dimension through Titan. You know, Rachel Stott and company working on the artwork, and just amazing storylines that gave you a chance to legitimately get some writers at the helm who understood all of the subtle nuances of Doctors 9, 10, 11, and 12 proper. So when they say it's a four-doctor crossover, they're not saying, well, it's three doctors and then a quick passing by of the War Doctor or something. That counts as a fourth. Now, this was
right.
You got to spend a lot of panel time with each one of them, and I think the writers had them genuinely locked. And I think artists like Rachel and company were able to – well, Rachel knows – I mean, she is a Capaldi doctor. That's her thing. I mean, she's probably drawn more iterations of Peter than Peter has doodled of himself. But it was a great little series, and just an interesting exercise in dealing with that kind of a really complicated crossover piece. So please, I don't know if they're ever going to publish that as an omnibus, so you're going to have to just get them as individual issues. But it's still fresh enough off the press that you can still do so. It's a very good chance that your local comic shops will be able to either have or acquire for them. Get them while you can, and then bring them to Galley and have the artists sign them, because you can. From the book side of things, I didn't really have a lot of the novelizations or literary extensions of the story, because this year I was really more impressed with some of the things that were written about the show than for the show. Here local to us in North America, we had a great publication done by the folks over at ETB, who normally do the Outside In series, where they discuss individual episodes. They did a publication called Red, White, and Who, which is really all about the Doctor Who experience as it manifests itself within the United States, how American fans have embraced the program and amplified it, really. So Jan Fennick and all the other major contributors to that did a great, great job with it. Please, if you have not gone to grab an excerpt of it and see if it's something that you would enjoy, please do. Most of the stuff that you can acquire from ATB is going to be good reading all around, because these are people who, like us, just they love the program. They love the content for everything that it's worth, and speak literally volumes, volume one,
literally
about it. There was another little publication, and I say little because it was short. It was only 100 pages or so, but it's fun. It's this little, I don't know if you remember when the Harry Potter books were reaching their peak, when you got around book like 5, 6, the JK sanctioned a bunch of little books, one of which was like The Care and Feeding of Fantastic Beasts, Quidditch Through the Ages, and so forth. And there were these little extensions to the universe that were officially sanctioned. They were part of canon, obviously, because Fantastic Beasts became a cinematic release and so forth. Well, they did one for Doctor Who, which is really freaking cool. And it addresses something that we have been asked many, many, many times over the years. And that has to do with a better understanding of Time Lords as a society. So, brief history of Time Lords. Pick it up pretty cheap on the Amazons there. Can you get it electronically? Yeah, you can get it on the Kindle. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Steve Tribe put it together, and it's an interesting little collection some facts and some embellishments that are sanctioned, BBC approved, and canon. Of the Time Lord civilization. So for people that have been asking us, you know, well, how do we know a little bit more about life on Gallifrey that isn't involving the Doctor and so forth? Well, here you go. You got an opportunity to kind of dig around with this particular piece. I personally have not read it. I know a number of folks who have and thought it was kind of an interesting little coda. But I have not heard anybody who has spoken particularly ill about it. I mean, some people will say, well, yeah, this is, if you dig deep enough, you'll get most of this from the episodes that you watch, or if you read enough novels. But if you don't get a chance to absorb all that content, or you don't have access to a lot of that content, hello, United States. then this is an opportunity to see a lot of that culminated in, and you know that it's legit. It's not some sort of a, you know, fanfic embellishment or anything of that sort.
Yeah.
So. And last one I had on the list here, which we've talked about as well, but I still think it's adorable because I was always a big fan growing up of A.A. Milne, and you know, I grew up in Pooh Corner kind of thing, you know, the 100 Acre Wood.
Yeah.
When RTD published the Now We Are 600 as a set of poems that all have to do with Time Lords and companions and life within Doctor Who, it's you could not really do wrong adding this to your children's library or your own personal library. And the illustrations, just for the, I don't know what they call the just inside cover on a hardcover when there's things, either illustrations or maps or things that are generally included just inside the front and back covers of a book. There's a name for it, literally, from some.
Yeah. I can't remember what the name of it is though.
But these are all these hand-drawn duns of all of these, you know, representations of all of the companions. And they are, in their simplicity, they are perfect. Absolutely perfect. From the illustrations alone, the book is worth the money. But the poems are also really endearing, too. So, and they do actually smack of a kind of an A. Milne poetic meter. You know, they've got that kind of a feel to them. So, really, really well done in that regard too. So another gift for us this year. Anything anybody else wants to add on to the roster?
No, I think we've covered pretty much the extent of it.
Cool. So things to watch, things to listen to, things to read, things to see, things to smell, taste. All right, you're on your own for the rest of the senses.
But just out of curiosity, did either of you get an actual Doctor Who themed gift for Christmas?
No, I did not.
This year,
No, I take that back.
Did you?
No, sorry. No, I didn't.
No?
I don't know, because a lot of my gifts got shipped accidentally to New Orleans, so I don't know exactly what all of them are just yet.
That happens.
Yeah.
You know, can't logically be in two places at the exact same point in time. I'm trying to remember if I did. Did I? Yes. Yes, I did. Some stocking stuffer stuff, little trinkets and baubles and whatnot. Yeah. But no, at this point, I told most people this year, look, I got everything I need. The house is chock-a-block full of all of the trip-trap I could possibly need. Buy me 2 hours to sleep. That's all I want. Just give me more hours in the day. So.
Yeah.
As our little extra segment here, we wanted to be cognizant of the fact that as we close 2017 and break into 2018, screaming and flailing our arms, that we still have until, as we mentioned, the fall, according to BBC One, before we see the 13th Doctor emerge in her episodes proper. So that means that we've got some great time to plow through our classic rewatches, which we're going to be closing in. The Baker era is coming up, kids.
Yeah.
Banana Town USA here.
But see, a little bit of inside baseball is that when you do a podcast about a show that's only on for like 12 weeks during the year, that leaves 40 weeks that you have to fill with other content.
Yay, maths.
That's not true. Sometimes we take a week off.
Have we ever really? Once.
I think we have.
I think when we all had, like, whooping plague. Cough or something. Yeah. But a lot of times we have additional material that's been archived that we could release to keep it, chronologically intact. But, no, at this point, we've got a load of things that we're, as we mentioned, even tonight, we've mentioned a lot of things that we're going to be discussing over some of the weeks ahead. But we're always looking for additional contributions. So, thank you to some of our listeners who have said things like Nicole, who said, let's talk about the music scores specifically. You know, Murray Gold is closing his songbook as well. So let's look at Murray's contributions as well as some of the other major contributions to the scores for Doctor Who going back over the years. Great. We're absolutely going to do that. Guest stars. The idea of talking about, are you including a guest star because of popularity or because people are begging and pleading to be on the show? And who are the people that, as a result of their appearance on Doctor Who, have been able to springboard their career? Bert, one of our good friends and listeners, suggested the idea of talking for a good episode about the Terry Nation effect. You know, the whole idea of why is there still an obligation, well, if you want to call it that, for including the Daleks every season? Or is it something where, you know, there's ever going to be something where we really move into a totally new direction with the Daleks? Why is Terry Nation still credited, or the Terry Nation estate still credited for these things when we see them occur in new episodes and so forth? So we'll discuss that as well. But that still leaves us loads and loads of weeks where we get a chance to talk about things that you want to hear about. So you need to tell us what you want to hear about, as you've been doing. But how can they go about doing that?
Well, there's tons of ways that they can do it. Obviously, the email is the most obvious way. It's feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, Facebook. We're on Facebook. That's where most of our conversations really tend to kick off, is on the Facebook page.
Facebook conversation threads get pretty intense. A few direct messages from time to time, but as much as we love getting the direct messages, and we'll converse with you all day long, I'd love to see them appear more publicly. Put them on the wall, or put them the page, so that everyone else can chime in on them as well. Because your fellow listeners may have some contributions or ways to be able to kind of build on an idea that may be really constructive to us as well. So So keep it public. You know, that we still have a voicemail. This cracks me up. I can't remember the last time somebody actually. I used a phone.
Are you sure it even works?
I was going to say, I'm going to need to check that and make sure that's still valid, because, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, let's do that.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So yeah. So knowing that we've got some material we're going to be interspersing with our classic rewatches going through, that are going to carry us well through Q1 of 2018. But we always want to make sure that the stuff we're going to be discussing are things that you want to hear about and things that you want to chime in on. So, because we want to have your involvement in the conversation. This is, we're doing this because we want to talk with you, because this is basically our opportunity to queue up conversations that we have with all of you in convention lobbies, and on Twitter feeds and Facebook threads and such. So this is just basically conversation starters. So, let us know what the topics are, and we'll damn well roll with it, because we got a lot of weeks to fill.
Indeed.
I ain't gonna lie.
Indeed.
Been a long wait.
All right, we ready to get into the news?
Yeah, man. Can we start with the melancholy moment?
Yeah,
let's get that and out. Then we'll get it out of the way. We'll have our little moment to go, and then get it out of our system and move on.
The last breath of 2017.
It really is. I mean, and I did not expect this. But when I got to see this this time lapse piece that the BBC shared, where they were breaking down the TARDIS set, was indescribable.
Yeah.
Because for the first couple minutes, or for the first few, I should minutes, first couple seconds, which are probably the first, day and a half of the actual process, and I don't know how long it took to actually break this all down with the cranes coming in and everything, because they tore it down to a bare soundstage.
Yes.
Literally nothing left.
And I was watching it feeling hopeful. I was like, well, maybe I'm going to get a glimpse of the new set. Maybe that's how it's like, they're leading up to it right now. They're teasing us out.
Yeah.
And no, it ends with the complete destruction of the TARDIS set.
Yeah. Then sweeping the floors and turning the lights off.
Yeah.
I was hoping when they got it down to the girders that you'd see them moving in the new pieces.
Yeah.
That they were going to keep the round and just move new set pieces in. But no.
I thought down the same to the thing, sticks. Yeah.
Wow. It was
the next Doctor's not going to have a TARDIS.
It's all VR.
I mean, that's why I got blown up.
Oculus.
Yeah, she's just driving Bessie around again.
Yes! Yes! Okay.
Keith's like, I'm okay with this now.
something else that we know we will not get back, besides the 12th's TARDIS interior. There were rumors that we were going to see Capaldi as some sort of a very, even if a brief reprise of the role, that they were going to bring the thick of it back out of retirement, even for maybe a miniseries or just a one special. So they went to creator and showrunner Armando Iannucci and asked him whether there would be a Malcolm Tucker return. His response is
no.
No.
just no.
Not even a period, exclamation point. No. And someone else asks, no. It's done. So, which is unfortunate. Yeah. Well, but then again, I don't know. I got to wonder, have we gotten enough from Malcolm Tucker? I mean, I don't know. Did either of you see, I know you've seen a little bit of Into the Loop, or I should say of The Thick of It. Did you see In the Loop, which was the film?
I haven't seen any of The Thick of It.
I've seen bits and pieces of In the Loop, but I haven't really watched it now.
Okay, because still, as far as I know, it's still available on Netflix as well. And you don't necessarily need to have watched The Thick of It to get it. Sort of consider it to be, Haley, if you wanted to use that as your step in and see if you wanted to step back into The Thick of It. Which is a very different pace. It's kind of like a political office, you know, live mockumentary kind of thing, like the UK office, but it's all happening within parliamentary positions and
more like
and,
Parks and Rec.
Yes, but at the ministry level.
Okay.
So, yeah, and it's absolutely worth it for a lot of reasons. I mean, Peter Capaldi notwithstanding. I mean, even if you were to take him out of it, it's still a pretty entertaining show. And then he comes into it, and it just reaches a whole new level because he's just brilliant. He's just
Capaldi.
He paints with profanity. There will be some of the most beautifully phrased, vulgar epithets you've ever heard in your life.
I've seen the Tumblr memes.
Yeah, you just want to write them down and just keep them in your pocket because they're beautiful. And just in case somebody says something stupid to you, you want to pull it out and be able to recite it really quickly. So
yeah.
So that's not going to happen.
For anyone that wants to know what we're talking about and you're not faint of heart, just go on Google and search Malcolm Tucker GIFs and just enjoy to your heart's content because holy crap, some of this stuff is just... like Keir said, he paints with profanity, and it is brilliant.
I'll one up you. The GIFs don't even do it justice because you can't get it with the brogue. YouTube, just YouTube Malcolm Tucker insults, and you'll get playlists. People put playlists together, like 30, 40 entries long of him just dressing people up and down for their ineptitude or his supposed ineptitude. And they're brilliant. They're brilliant. It's poetry. It's freaking poetry.
Yeah.
But speaking of Peter, another thing that he's done that does not involve profanity whatsoever, but it does remind you once again that we did not and do not deserve this man. We simply don't.
No.
Is his response to a 9-year-old's fan's concern about the regeneration and the fact that this 9-year-old, his doctor, wasn't going to be there anymore and didn't quite understand the process. Everybody's gone through their first regeneration. And he didn't just, I think did his father point this out through a tweet that he was concerned about it?
I believe that's how it came about. Yeah.
So he was tweeted that there was a concern and Peter being old school awesome that he is, wrote a letter, didn't just write a letter, wrote a card, didn't just fill out the inside of a card. He illustrated a card because this is what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And the response is one of the most beautiful things that you could use as a closure to his era as well. Saying things like, that we've said all along, you'll meet the new doctor. They will become your doctor. Mm-hmm. You'll love them within moments. You're not going to forget the past doctor. (Parentheses) Hope that you don't. and they'll always be there. If you look for them, and they'll look for you too. I mean, just the way he phrases it is just he puts so much thought into these things. And I have to wonder how much of this really comes off the cuff or how much work goes into these kinds of compositions or whether it just comes naturally. I mean, does this, every time he speaks, this is the way that he expresses himself. I have to think that this is just the way his mind works.
Well, I think it comes from like always being a Doctor Who fan. You know, just doctorishness is just ingrained into who he is as a person. So when he's, you know, communicating with the fans, it comes out in the same way as part of his personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. It just, I don't know. This was one of those things, like when I came across it and read it, I think I actually said this in our group chat. Like I sent it and I was like, that's it. I want to be Peter Capaldi when I grow up. Like this is the level. I mean, for everything that his final few speeches said in the show, Capaldi is just personifying that right now. I mean, that, you know, this is a level of kindness that humanity does not deserve right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that the letter that he sent to him, you know, he filled it out in correct, you know, format, whatever. He even put the date at the top, November 23rd, 1963.
Yeah. Yeah. Dates it from the premiere episode, you know, closes it in proper fashion that, again, suits exactly where his doctor and David, the young fan's doctor, left off. So it's as if he's really speaking from the voice of the doctor that this young man knows and admires. You know, everything ends and it's always sad, but everything begins again, and that's always happy. So be happy. Yeah. I mean, that's... We don't freaking deserve this, man. We never did.
We never will.
So you really just have to wonder what he's going to be doing next. Hopefully he's going to take a bit of a break and just do some stage work or something and just, you know.
No, the American Con Circuit.
Between as best he can. I mean, it's one of the reasons why we're not going to get to see Pearl at Galley in February is because she's actually got a stage play going up in April that they're going to be in the thick of rehearsals for.
He could join the Hamilton touring cast. That'll be great.
And Peter Capaldi as King George. Wow.
That, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
We killed Kier. You're welcome.
I got nothing left on that one. The last little bit of news here. Obviously with our first appearance of Jody at the console as our briefly at the console before the console blew her out the door. We've got fan reactions and it was just all over the place. But thanks to the folks over at the Radio Times, they decided to cull together some tweets that kind of personified the vast majority of the reactions that we were getting. And it was just various levels of flailing, all kinds of flailing. Everything from from people just screaming, yes, to people thanking Peter, with a hashtag be kind. I would love to see that hashtag persist for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think that the one tweet that I saw in response to this, probably one of my favorites because it sums it up so succinctly, is seriously going to miss Peter Capaldi as Doctor Who. He has been absolutely fantastic. Having said that, so ready for Jodie Whittaker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. It's that weird cross-section of like, yes, this is sad. I can't stand the fact that he's leaving, but holy crap, can I see some more of Jodie yet?
Yeah. Is there any way that we could have them running concurrently? And just have two storylines. I'll keep it straight in my head. I can do it. But yeah. So that's where we are. And now the wait begins. But as we so often do, we've got things to keep us busy. So Jay, what are we doing next week?
So next week we're coming back to our classic rewatch, and we're getting to the long-awaited The Green Death.
Yeah,
this is going to be fun.
Is this the bubble wrap monster?
No.
Which bubble wrap monster? This is Doctor Who. You got to be more specific.
Yeah. Literally glowing green skin, and the boss, and some interesting stuff from Joe Grant and Yates. So
okay.
I will say no more because Haley's got some viewing to do. Don Cleese from Acorn Media will be joining us back in the studio to discuss this one because this is one that is really near and dear to him, and he's got some great insight on it. I know because when we've discussed this episode or the story specifically on other instances, so when I saw it coming around on the calendar, he was definitely on the short list of folks to chat with about it. So, yeah, going to have a lot of fun with it. Well, fun... Fun may not be the right word. We're definitely going to have a lot to discuss.
We're going to have a cast. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's a podcast.
Well, this has been episode 266 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I bet you're going to have a really great year.
And this is Kier saying, Doctor, I let you go.
And this is Haley saying, the Doctor is dead. Long live the Doctor.
We'll see you next week.
And I'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio or on Facebook @facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Spleen.
As I watched the levels on my recorder just spike,
it's drifted into oh f- that. Sir, we've gone to ludicrous volume.